Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Pony Development Sync for December 6, 2017. We got Joe, Gordon, and Scott along with Sean here today. So let's dive in here. We got one PR that looks like is ready for discussion. That would be 2402, which combines the release and debug OS X builds into a single Travis job. Travis made some changes a while back, and it takes a lot longer to get OS X machines to build stuff on now at this point. They're certainly a lot more stable. They don't have it where it just completely goes away, but it also takes a lot longer. So with this change that Dippin opened, it would basically run config both debug and release for the LLVM version, for each LLVM version, which would probably cut in half the amount of time it takes in order to do OS X overall, as the amount of time that we spend running the jobs is nowhere near as much as the time that that we spend waiting to get them. Joe, you signed off on this. This seems like a reasonable thing to me.
I think it's smart, and it's likely to work unless Travis does some kind of smart scheduling where they make you wait longer for an OS X build based on how long the average time that your build takes, which they may do. But I mean, even if they do, we wouldn't be losing anything on time today.
Yeah, I think it's worth hitting the merge button, and if this causes some kind of problem, it's easy enough to revert.
Yeah. So,
any objection from anyone? All right, I'll take that silence as no objection and rebase merge. Thank you very much, Dippin. And That's our only PR that we have right now that's fully there. There was one OS X intermittent failure that happened with 2386, but I figure. Have you taken a look at 2386 yet, Joe? The dynamic scheduler thread scaling based on workload. Oh, and Joe said be right back on that. All right. So I would say for anybody.
Hey, sorry, what are we talking about?
2386. Have you had a chance to take a look at it yet? I feel like this is one where we'd want to have more folks around when we discuss it, but I just wanted to make sure you'd seen it so that, like at some point when we would discuss it, that you'd be up to speed. There's a decent amount of change in there in a relatively small number of lines.
Yeah, I like the idea of it. I don't think that I'm knowledgeable enough about the schedulers to make a good decision about it. I actually was the one who requested that Benoit and Sylvan be added to the requested reviewers for this PR, just because I wanted to make sure that either one or both of them signed off on it. I'm assuming, Sean, that you've kind of taken a look and signed up on it, and you know about the scheduler too. But for me, it's kind of out of my field of expertise a little bit.
Yeah, that's that sounds reasonable. We will punt until we have a Benoit and a Sylvan. I think that's reasonable. The signal stuff scares me a little, but that's largely because POSIX signals always scare me just a little.
Yeah, they're weird.
So let's do some issues here. 2401. This is from Andy. Tail optimization does not seem to be applied when dash dash debug flag is used. That's certainly a that's an interesting thing that he has there.
Yeah. So this is an interesting one, because on some level, like tail call optimization has become something that people think of as like a language feature, rather than like just strictly being an optimization, right? Like I think maybe the name is a little bit misleading, because it's not just that it's an optimization. It's actually something that like you can write programs that break if that feature is not present on the language. Yeah. So yeah.
I feel like it's a language feature, not an optimization at this point. Yeah.
So it's interesting. Yeah. I mean, we have to, I think it's the sort of thing where we have to make a decision about whether to call it a language feature and whether to call it an optimization. I think that if it's possible for us to do so, we should make it a language feature and have it do as Andy describes. I'm not sure about the details of like where this happens in like our LLVM stack, but yeah, if that's possible, that would be nice. Otherwise, we just need to document that this is not something that your programs should depend on, which would be another option for us. But if we can provide it as something that programs can depend on, that's obviously nicer.
I would agree with that. Anybody else got any thoughts? Okay. I'm writing this up right now, Joe. Okay. Does my short write up seem reasonable to you, Joe?
I think so. Yep.
Alrighty. That would make our next one is let's see, 2392, which was opened by me. We had a bit of discussion here. I don't know what, if anything, we would want to do with this, right? I mean, this thing never actually throws an error. But as you say, it's a self-fulfilling prophecy. I like that term, Joe. I'd forgotten about it. It made me laugh when I read it.
I don't know if this is possible to, like I said, I'm not sure if it's it's undecidable. It could be decidable, but it's at least really impractical. I don't know if it's like strongly undecidable or just like impractical to decide. Because when you start, I mean, obviously it's easy to detect if the method calls itself, but if you start introducing other, you know, method calls in between, maybe they're even in another package and you don't know that.
I feel like this is, it's a bug, right? But I don't know that it's a bug that we actually need to address or not. Like, I opened it in part because I'm like, well, that's interesting.
Yeah, it is interesting.
Like, I, you know, and This came up because Andy found it because it was in when I updated the factorial example in the tutorial. This is the code that I had, and I had run it through the compiler, and it compiled. And Andy pointed out that shouldn't be partial. There's no actual way that this can throw an error. And I was like, oh, you're right. Well, isn't that interesting?
Yeah, I mean, and that's one thing is I think that maybe in the normal development workflow, this is not as likely to come up, except for in the case of like a refactor, which is what you were doing, but. Like, you know, typically, you know, we're, like, Pony really puts a lot of, like, pressure on you to try to keep the question marks to a minimum. And so I think that you're probably more likely to, you know, leave off a question mark that should be there than to put on a question mark that should not be there. But I don't know if that's a good enough answer. But I also don't know that there's any practical way to detect this, so...
So I feel like I still think technically it's a bug, but like this is complexity, major effort, and you know, if it's even doable, and it's like it's not a particularly like in any way high priority thing. I also think that this would be completely relevant to say it's a won't fix. Based on the complexity level, I don't know.
Yeah, let's. I guess we can leave it as bug needs investigation. With like you know, but we should just make a note that as part of one of the first things that someone should do as investigating is to determine if this is Turing undecidable or not, because you don't want to spend too much time on it if it's an impossible problem.
Okay, so let's see. Undecidable. Okay, how's that comment, Joe?
Yeah, I think that's good.
Okay. Next up, 2390. We have some conversation here. Let's see, functions, I vaguely remember this.
Yeah. So the question, I guess, would be, I'm the one that added the label. The question would be whether those two interfaces should be made public. Like whether it's, I guess, whether it's like surprising that they are private or just whether we want to, I guess, proceed with making them public without an RFC.
So if I understand this correctly, I still wouldn't be able to do shift left or shift right on integer, but if I said that it was an unsigned integer or a signed integer, I would be able to do it. Yes? Or yeah. Am I reading this wrong?
Yeah, and you would have to specify, right. If you say it's a signed integer, you have to specify the, this is where it gets weird and probably unwieldy for signed integers. Because typically when you're doing this, like when you're using one of these traits, you have to be passing on, it's like one of these self-referential ones. I'm forgetting what the right term is for this, but like the fact that, like, for example, unsigned integer A, where A is an unsigned integer A. And that's, these are in place because they need to be able to reference the concrete type that it's implementing the trait as a type parameter. So that they can, you know, return that concretely because we don't have a self type in coding. Mm-hmm. But for signed integer, you've got kind of the weird case where you have to know the unsigned integer for, you have to know or have a type argument for the unsigned integer equivalent of the given signed integer. So you can't just take like U64 I64 as a as the type argument because you would need to take I64 and U64 as the type argument in order to use this, and you have to get it from somewhere. So this making these public won't make anything worse than it already is, but it will make it. It will expose this little bit of weirdness that it's just like, I don't know that there's a better way to do this, but it's a non-ideal way of... In fact, hang on a sec. I'm not sure why we have to take the argument as an unsigned integer. Does it ever make sense to shift left or shift right by a number of bits higher than the maximum number that the signed integer you're shifting is able to represent?
Wait, good. Sorry, you lost me there a little. So can you repeat that one more time?
So does it ever make sense to shift left or shift right where the number of bits that you're shifting is higher than the maximum number representable by the number by the type that you're shifting on? So, like, if you have an I64, does it ever make sense to shift by anything more than 64 bits, for example? But this would be like shifting by, you know, that huge number that's represented by 0xFFFFF.
I can't think of one. If I know anybody who could come up with some off the wall reason for why you might want to do that, I'm going to guess it would be Sylvan.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm going to comment, and I'm guessing that maybe the reason why we can't do this is because we're relying on it being a compiler intrinsic, maybe. Hang on, let me look up the implementation of that. I'm only looking at the trait right now. Yeah, we never... Yeah, so this is one of those, like, weird circular areas of the compiler where this is never implemented in Ponyland. It's only something that is sort of, like, implied by the... Right, because all we do is what looks like a recursive call, right? The shift left function uses the shift left operator, which calls the shift left function. And that's never implemented concretely anywhere in Pony space. It's in C land. So I'm trying to think of where that ends up in the compiler. Okay, yeah, so we have in genOperator.c, we have shift left. Yeah, and so we even, yeah. Yeah, so this is actually, going back to my earlier point, this actually will give an AST error if you use a numeric literal that's larger than the type width. So... that's not a meaningful operation. So it's something that, I guess the thing to do here would probably be, I would want to see if we can get rid of the B type parameter from signed integer altogether and replace it with A. And then in the LLVM code gen, in genOperator.c, we do whatever's necessary to convert the integer type over to something that makes sense and make it work without having to take an unsigned integer, and just have any negative values for the signed integer argument be treated as if they were the unsigned equivalent in the top half of the unsigned space. So I can write a comment to that effect, but that's work that could take place like after this if we wanted to. For now, I think that making them public should be fine. It's just that the signed integer trait is going to be really difficult to use until we do this kind of change that I'm talking about. Actually, let me see where else that type parameter is used real quick.
I wonder why that second type parameter was added, because at the point in time that signed int and integer and unsigned integer were made, private, it signed integer still only took a single type value. It only took that. You can see it from back in August 2015, when Sylvan refactored the arithmetic interfaces. At that point in time, signed integer was only taking a single type parameter. So the change was made for some reason.
Yeah.
Why?
It might have been part of, let's see. And the only thing that he had as part of this trait, I'm going to go run back to that commit and see how shift left and shift right were implemented then. Because the only thing that was part of that trait, I think, was the string method, which is not in use anymore, or at least it doesn't take this. You do a format ants in a different way with using the format package. At this time, it wasn't even doing the shift left. Shift left and shift right were part of trait integer, and so maybe this was part something that that Benoit changed.
This look, I got a feeling like this, did this happen with the unsafe math operation stuff that he added, maybe?
I was guessing that same thing.
Yeah.
I'm just trying to go back in history to that point. Yeah, so that was PR 1395. A good year.
Oh, was that back when I was making all the stupid year jokes?
I mean, probably not. It was probably before, but that was my little joke. Anyway, so what happened? Okay, so he didn't touch shift left and shift right in this PR. So I'm going to use git blame here and see where this comes from. And of course, just as it was, I guess GitHub just wasn't loading it. If I haven't scrolled down that far yet, I can't control F. Is that a GitHub thing? Oh yeah, it's one of the things that the large diff is not rendered by default. Okay, that's what's going on. Okay. So this was moved as part of that work along with the other functions that are there. So I guess we should wait to discuss this with Benoit, because I'm sure he had a reason for doing it, and I could probably reverse engineer it by reading through this PR, but there's a lot of unrelated stuff in here.
Yeah, I think it would be good, and I'd like to hold off on making it public until we know what our plan is. And then we can decide whether, like, making it public and then potentially doing a breaking change not long afterwards is what we want to do, or if we'd rather do them in one go or whatever it might be. But I certainly think it makes sense that we want to have shift left and shift right exposed in some kind of way.
Okay.
You wanna comment to that effect? I think
yeah.
You'll be better to comment that than me, and we can leave the needs discussion during sync, so that we'll notice when Benoit is around. Before we continue, we're close to the top of the hour, so does anybody have anything that they would like to discuss? Gordon, Scott, Joe, or Kodak? I don't actually know what your name is beyond Kodak, but you as well.
I was lurking just to get opinions about the possible performance impacts of the dtrace additions to the message push and pop operations.
Yes, that's a good one. 2295.
Right, so the last commit there, the experiment for if def out dtrace only arguments, I need to check to see what else I've goofed up with Travis CI.
Let me take a look here.
I'm not worried about that. What I really wanted to mention about the if defs is that they take the performance degradation out of all of the systems that I've tested, including my AMD, my old AMD box from, I don't know, 4 years ago or whatever. That was the one that would see the lowest throughput on that on the benchmark I've been using, the micro benchmark. But I don't have a sense of how other people feel whether those if defs are too ugly to keep or not.
My general feeling is that I think that it's okay to have them there because having the tracing information is so valuable. And I think that it's the way you've done it is fairly clear. And also I like how the if def is in line. I mean, it does make it uglier, but having the if def in line means you're less likely to accidentally change something else about the overall call if the outer call was not taken there. So I
want to preface my response first with Scott that I'm a bad person. Okay, I like what you did. Okay, but I'm prefacing that with I'm a bad person, and I'm regularly told that my ideas for things are like, no, that's bad. Like, right. I can see how some people would complain that maybe that's ugly or whatever, but I look at it and go, hey, look at that. That's a pretty elegant way using the tools available in order to improve the situation when you're using dtrace, but not hurt performance otherwise. And I think it actually reads pretty clearly when you're doing it.
Yeah. So there are a few functions here that have added parameters that that are not if def. Like, and I'm guessing that's maybe because they're not run very often. So things like pony int, sched, noisy asio. I'm guessing that's not run very often, and that's why you were thinking it's okay to not if def those out. And like, I'm seeing some send message all takes an additional index now too.
I believe you're correct in that. I didn't. I added the if defs to the push and pop and those six functions directly, and I didn't bubble to the next sort of level up. And I could, but honestly, the experiments that I ran had shown that the performance at a 95% confidence interval is the same, and so I didn't go any further.
Yeah, I wouldn't be surprised if those extra, 32-bit integers don't make a big difference. I'm on board with the way you approach this, but I think I want Benoit to sign off on it before we merge, just so that we can make sure that he feels like his concerns are resolved. But I'm on board personally. I can write that in the comment.
Yeah, and I just did the little approve thing, so I think we could wait for Benoit, but then get it in. Yeah.
Right. And just for background, the commit before that, they rearranged the argument order. So putting those optional arguments at the end, so that if, for example, the compiler were putting those arguments in registers and the arguments weren't being used, that that there wouldn't have to be arguments shifting around in the registers or whatever. That did absolutely nothing. Or nearly nothing, and it seemed to even make the AMD's performance worse. That was the one place where it didn't do nothing. It actually made things worse, which really puzzled the hell out of me and realized I don't know how computers work.
You turn electrons on and off. Boom, now you know how computers work. There you go.
Anyhow, so, okay. I'll wait for Benoit. Thanks.
Let's see here.
Yeah, it looks like the one Travis failure was a spurious failure. So,
for the thing that I have an issue open for need to fix something. All right, and I sent Benoit a message for asking him to have a. Look at that, and you also did it there. Boom. Okay. Anybody got anything else? Joe, you were when we were doing that before. You were typing. So, anything that you wanted to raise or bring up?
Let me take a quick look through those. Benoit's looking at that one. Let's see. I don't know that I've looked at 2389 yet. Looks like you've looked at it, Sean, and you added the tag. I haven't looked at this yet, but I'd be on board for discussing this if no one else has anything they want to talk about.
Okay, so before we pick up the issues again, then we just say on the release of 0.21, we're holding that at my request right now. It looks like I would be doing that release probably sometime next week is what it looks like. As a quick update on that for folks. All right. Shall we move back to issues, Joe?
Yeah.
Well, let's talk about 2389 then. Yeah. I don't really remember this one except I don't even remember doing this, but apparently I poked at this at some point that I don't remember.
Yeah, so
right. Okay. That's right. I remember him saying he was like he tried to do a simple version of it in like the playground, and he couldn't get it to happen. And the reason why is that thing where I was like, oh, I figured out is you get the error message correctly if it's all in one file.
Oh, okay.
Oh wait, my thing when pulled in via user, you get. That doesn't make any sense. Oh, when pulled in via use, good job there, Sean, making a clear comment. Okay.
Does it have to be via use, or is it just in different separate files?
That's an interesting question. I did not try it in any other way.
I'm wondering if maybe it has something to do with the, sometimes we've seen issues where if the entities are getting compiled in a different order, you see an error, or like you have problems when they're compiled in a specific order. So let me try, I'm going to open up the playground real quick, run the example you pasted, and then shuffle the order of things and see if I can make it break that way. It could be an ordering issue. I tried a bunch of different permutations and it doesn't seem to be it. Okay. Well, scratch that. So it has to be via use. I suppose that makes sense because that's what the it's part of what the scope paths is about. Interesting. So this only happens when, and that makes it harder to write a test for this too.
I know.
Our compiler tests don't deal with views. So, yeah, if I have, let me just try to reproduce it. Okay, so you're saying that if what you, the example you have there, that minimal example, if I put that in a subdirectory.
He has a link to what he had there. Let me open that up again. All right. It was let me go to that entity. The trait entity through the end of that, that's in a file called entity.pony, and it's in a package where main's not actually using it, but it's just using that package that it's in.
Okay.
And but he has an empty file in here as well. Let me see if it's the empty file by any chance that makes that happen. No, even without the empty file, it still happens.
Okay, what happened here? What am I doing? Okay, I got a bunch of... Oh, that was straight. Recompiling from the CD.
Yeah, it's definitely to use somehow. I think. Wait. Oops. Hold on.
No. If I just. Oh, hang on. There it is. All right. Got it. Reproduce. So, do I need that trait, or can I use none? Next question. Yeah. Okay. So yeah, it can be reduced a bit further. Yeah. So there are obviously a couple issues with the syntax. One of them is that it's missing the parameter name, obviously. The other one is that it doesn't have a body. But
Yeah,
so I can look real quick to see what open this up in LDB. Let me see. Here we're hitting that assertion and why. Forgot that Benoit changed the signature of ASD print recently.
So if I add a body back onto, if I put a body on that method, we no longer crash. So yeah. Like it then gives me the error about interact with the expected parameter names being wrong.
Uh-huh. Yeah, that's interesting. Yeah, if the we're erroring there. Oh yes, okay. So that must mean it. There's definitely the two errors combining. I'm not sure why that is. Scope.c line 345. Right. Okay, that makes sense. Okay, well, that should have been caught in the syntax pass, and that's the question. Why is it not getting caught there? Because we're not doing any check at all there. Why? Where is that check occurring, if not in the syntax pass? You just not have it anyway? It's odd. Oh, is it because of? Is this because of case functions?
Really?
Everything that's wrong in the world is because of case functions. Let's see here. No, okay, so we do have an error for it. The expected parameter name works that happened. It is because of case functions. Okay. Oh man. We need new case functions. Yeah, so what's going on here is when case functions were added, those happen in a separate pass that's later on, and case functions allow a value to be given as where like where a parameter name and parameter type are expected, just like it's a match statement, which is probably I think that's really terrible. But, it's what you get when you turn the case methods into match statements, because it's allowing you not just to match on different types, but to match on different values like match statements do. So for example, you could have fun foo where in the parameters section, you just have like a string like X, and then you get a fun foo again with string Y, and then the first one gets called if you call it with the string X, and the second one gets called if you call it with string Y. We've talked about getting rid of case methods in general, but I mean, that's a particularly problematic one. Anyway, so what happens here is that because this happens later, we're allowing it to pass through the syntax pass instead of erroring earlier. But it's not one of the cases that we expected in the scope pass. So, I mean, we could do two things here. we can change the scope pass to have its own kind of error for this, or at least to like make some changes to the scope pass to allow you to see the method body error first, and then let the other one come later in the compile order. Or we can just remove case methods like we all want to anyway.
So I'll say this. I really like the idea of what case methods would provide. I think they would be a great addition to Pony. I don't think that their current implementation works well. I'm in favor of an RFC to yank them out, and then we could do another RFC to add them back in a more in a fashion where we've thought through them more, having learned from the first time.
Okay. So.
And I think it would be a waste of time to fix this bug right here because we should yank the case methods.
Yeah, it's still a little bit confusing to me why this is broken when, like why the scope, expects this to be X. So, okay, if you get the question, must specify body. So, why, where does that happen and why has it not happened yet? It's part of the syntax pass, I believe. Yeah. So the syntax pass should have caught the body method first. So I'm still confused about that. Okay. Yeah, I still, even though I understand why the, why this parameter name error is getting past us until later. What I guess I don't understand is why the method body one is not caught before, because the scope pass happens after the syntax passes, right? Is that right?
It looks like we assigned somebody to write an RFC to remove case methods, by the way.
Okay.
I would like to apologize. Apparently I did not do that. On the other hand, this was also right before I went on vacation. So I feel like forgetting everything that happens the week before you go on vacation is kind of like a thing you're allowed to do.
Yeah, it's the reason you go on vacation, right?
Yes. Because I went to go add an issue for this. I was like, let me search for it real quick. I'm like, oh, look, there is one. Oh, look, I'm assigned to it. Oh, look, it's right before I went on vacation.
All right, so I don't understand why the syntax pass is not happening first in the scope pass. Okay, so I'm not going to debug this anymore on the call. I'm just going to write a quick thing about what I'm still confused about.
Feel free to link to RFC issue 102.
Okay.
And I need to write a RFC for that. Yeah, I think the case methods without exhausted match are pretty damn useless. And then also source of possible weird ass bugs and everything. But
I think the other thing I want to see different with the way case methods are in the future is some way of explicitly marking them as such, because I think you also run into issues where you accidentally create a case method where you didn't intend to, just because it's a, like you copied the same like method name, right? And it happens to have the same number of arguments, so it compiles, but you created a really weird situation that you didn't intend. So I think there should be some way of marking that, you know, hey, this set of functions goes together as a, you know, matcher. Or at least some way of marking that, like, I don't know, like just saying like fun match instead of fun, for example. But that may not be the best way to do it.
I think it's funny. One of the first things that got me excited about Pony when I was reading the tutorial was the case methods. And now, all this time later, I hear him going, we need to kill those things.
Oh, that's funny. Yeah, I mean, it's a cool thing. And, you know, like, for example, like, Erlang does it really well. Pony's just not doing it very well right now.
Yes.
And to be fair, it's one of those things that might work in it a little bit better in general when it's a functional language, but yeah. Like if all you have are a handful of like out of the box data types instead of a bunch of different objects and a really rich type system and all this stuff.
Alrighty. You're going to drop a note on that, right?
Yeah, I'm working on it at the moment.
Okay. I feel like that's a pretty good place for to wrap up today. Anybody disagree? I certainly know that hurt my brain some. I'll take that to mean no. And alrighty then. See y'all next week. Thank y'all for coming. Have a good one.